Edit, so you know what I'm saying.
That's great. I like that. I can, see, I can change that.
Yeah, you can change that.
The House Committee on Revenue for April 22nd, 2009 will come to order. Colleagues, we have five work sessions, and at least a couple of these bills are ready to work, and I'd like to start with those. So we'll open a work session on House Bill 3082. Chris?
Good morning, members, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3082 is the bill that creates the pilot project within the Department of Revenue to work with up to three state agencies, boards, or commissions that issue occupational licenses. In your packet, you have a Dash 4 amendment, which is a gut and stuff, and it is identical to the Dash 3 amendment, which the committee discussed last week, except for Section 4 on page 3, which repeals the bill on January 2nd, 2016. There was some discussion last time about the need for a sunset on a pilot project. So that's what the Dash 4 adds to the Dash 3. Also in your packet, you have a fiscal statement and a revenue impact statement for the Dash 4 amendments, both of them indicating minimal expenditures and minimal revenue impact. On the revenue impact side, I have less than $50,000 for each of the biennia. The policy here builds on a recommendation from the Department of Revenue in their from the report they presented to you on personal income tax compliance, the bill expands that recommendation beyond personal income tax compliance to include corporate taxpayers and cigarette and other tobacco taxpayers. So given the nature of the project, that it's a pilot project and that the participating licensing boards aren't specifically identified, I didn't put a number on there, but given the nature of the program that it would improve tax compliance, there is a minimal revenue impact as the program gets underway.
Great. Thank you. So is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 Amendment to House Bill 3082.
Thank you. Representative Brune moves the Dash 4 Amendment to House Bill 3082. Is there any discussion on the Dash 4 Amendment? Is there any objection to the Dash 4 Amendment? I don't see any objection. The Dash 4 Amendment is adopted. So now we're on the bill. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, if we're ready, I move House Bill 3082 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Reed moves House Bill 3082 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be voting against this bill in this committee and reserve the right to change my opinion by the time it gets to the floor. I hope that this bill gets a thorough discussion of the road we are walking down. It seems innocent enough, but I don't like the direction. This particular pilot may seem somewhat benign, but I think I've made it real clear that I don't like this collusion between agencies to gang up on taxpayers who are innocently trying to do their jobs. So I will be voting against it more as a protest vote than particular objection to this somewhat benignly written pilot that doesn't specify even what agencies are involved. That's another thing that bothers me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Other further discussion? Let's call the roll. And colleagues, you're voting on sending House Bill 3082 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey. Aye. Representative Gelder. No. Representative Gruner. Aye. Representative Gelder. Aye. Representative Call. Aye. Representative Reed. Aye. Representative Riley. Aye. Representative Brenner. Aye. Representative Reinhardt. Aye. Right.
Thank you. The motion passes and the bill goes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Representative Reed will carry.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3082. Colleagues, we've gotten one down. And Several more to go. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2068. Is that yours also?
Yes.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2068, you have a dash 5 in front of you, which is a combined amendment of the prior dash 1, dash 2, and dash 4, and this is the credit transfer bill. And what those amendments do, again, just to refresh people's memory, the dash 5 will identify four tax credits that a transferee may only be a C corporation, S corporation, a personal income taxpayer, and that when an income tax credit is transferred or sold, it may only do so be done once. And those are codifications of interpretations of existing statutes. So there's no real change. There's no change in law there. It's just confirming that the administrative agencies are interpreting statute correctly. The one piece that's a little bit different, policy-wise, is in Section 4. It pertains to the pricing of the transfer of credits, and it directs the Department of Energy to establish by rule a formula in determining the transfer price, and identifies that formula should include or will include inflation projections and market real rates of returns, and then once a year, Energy will go through the rules process to establish that formula. And then quarterly, they will update the transfer price just by essentially plugging in new inputs to that formula, new inflation projections, and so forth. There's no fiscal impact on it, and you have a revenue impact statement that has a minimal on it for the biennia, largely because most of the bill simply clarifies existing statute, and I put a minimal in terms of potential revenue impact ranging between plus and minus $50,000, getting at the change in the transfer price mechanism. Under this system, the intent is to have the transfer price more accurately reflect market conditions, so that'll be different from the existing system, which gets updated about once a year or so.
Thank you. And this is just a combination of the amendments we've already discussed, isn't it?
Correct. There's no new.
And do we have a fiscal?
The fiscal impact statement is a minimal expenditure.
Okay. I just didn't see it. All right, so we've got all the paper. Discussion? Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion? Or?
I was going to ask Representative Bence to make sure he's happy with it, because he did the work on the works group.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy with it.
You are?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you like to move it?
Mr. Chair, I move dash 1 amendments dated.
Actually, we're working on the dash 5.
Dash 5 amendments.
Which includes the dash 1s and the other amendments.
And 4s.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments dated 4-2009.
Thank you. Representative Bence moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2068. Is there discussion? I don't see any. Is there any objection to the Dash 5 amendment? I don't see any. Dash 5 amendments adopted. Representative Bence?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 2068 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bence moves House Bill 2068 to the floor with to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any other discussion? Is there anybody objecting to this bill going to the floor with a do-pass recommendation? All right, the bill goes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Representative Bence, would you like to carry this one? Representative Bence will carry, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2068. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2472 and simply note that, colleagues, that your vice chairs and I met last night and continued our conversation on the bill, and we have some some things to report, but I think before we do that, I'd like to ask Mr. Graney to come forward to clear up a question that we have about reliance on an application. The question has arisen, Mr. Graney, about the issue of at what point a business which has applied for a preliminary certificate might rely on that application without having received a preliminary certificate to go ahead with work with the expectation that they would receive these tax subsidies later. Could you talk about what the rules are in your agency and how they would apply to that situation?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, good morning, members of the committee. Mike Graney from Department of Energy. Mr. Chairman, the legally binding document on the state is the preliminary certification. When we issue that pre-cert, that indicates the cost that the state will provide in the amount of the certified cost for calculating the tax credit if the applicant goes forward and constructs the project or installs the project, whatever it is, consistent with that preliminary certification. Any investments they make prior to receipt of that preliminary certification, or pre-cert as we call it, is entirely at their own risk. The filing of the application is a cutoff in terms of any expenses made prior to that filing of that application are not eligible. But it doesn't mean that the filing of the application means that any and all expenses incurred after that are necessarily approved.
And does the agency have a rule that describes anything about whether or not an agency should rely on that application?
Mr. Chairman, I think our rules could be clearer, but there are provisions both in the rules and the law that, in fact, if the agency doesn't act within a certain period of time, the application is deemed denied. And in order to avoid making people resubmit, when we are running behind, and that did happen frequently this last year when we were kind of overwhelmed with applications, we indicated that any applications pending would be processed, that we weren't going to enforce the rejection requirements, but that those applications still had to get preliminary certification before applicants could rely upon them.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Graney on this? Could you provide us with a copy of the rules that are applicable to this question?
Okay. Be glad to, Mr. Chair.
I think that would be helpful for us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Berger.
Could I?
Please, yes, go ahead.
Mr. Graney, if I understand your testimony, what has happened is you've had a huge number of applications, more than you could process, and so there was sort of an implied, we're not going to cut you off in this time frame because the problem is ours, not yours. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's correct, that we would not act to just deny those and send them all back.
And is this backlog still in existence within your agency, or have you been able to get control?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, with new positions we received from the emergency board in the fall, we've been able to cut that backlog substantially. We still have some, but it's much shorter.
Mr. Chair, I think this speaks to the people who are caught up between that backlog and this legislation, and I think that we need to resolve that here at some level and make real clear to the agency and the people who haven't been able to get their applications to pre-cert, and we're changing the rules. So I just wanted to get that on the record that we need to deal with this. And I presume that was one of the discussions you had with the co-chairs at some point, or not?
With the vice chairs.
Yeah,
last
I mean
night.
The vice, yes, in fact, vice chairs.
That was one of the important topics of our conversation last night. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Berger, too, and for applications that are facing uncertainty because of this, we've had extended conversations with one project or series of projects in particular. We did issue our preliminary certifications on those last week, so we made our decisions on this, and we're working to resolve the backlog on those that would be affected by the legislation.
Thank you.
So are there any still pending? that might be affected by this legislation, that, as far as you know?
Mr. Chairman, yes, there will be some. There will be some that would be affected.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Representative Berger?
I would suggest that another amendment, if there isn't already one, to deal with this issue. And I'm not sure, you know, how that would read, but I would suggest that at some level we have to deal with those who are caught in this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Carl.
Just for the record, I think I fall squarely on the other side of that line. If there is no right bestowed that can be legally relied upon, there's nothing there to enforce. I do feel bad for companies that have gone down this road a long way, but if they've relied on something to their own detriment, I just have a real issue with that, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Do either of you want to talk a bit about where we went last night and what your recommendations are for us today? Or is that too complicated?
Did you go last night?
We
got it.
Huh?
Not it.
No. Representative Bates?
Sure. We had a wonderful time yesterday. And over on a beautiful day in a windowless room, we came up, we discussed a number of the amendments that are pending. For the record, I believe Representative Berger and I had a bet on the over-under on a number of additional amendments, and I think I won.
And I think he did.
With the over.
But he's vice chair. He has a certain advantage.
Yes, he does. He gets to generate more amendments.
That's right.
He also has the benefit of drafting amendments. So.
Yeah. Well, I can do that, too.
Colleagues, we discussed particular. We spent a lot of time discussing this question of how do we make sure that we don't catch companies unfairly as we are working through this process. Where we also spent a significant amount of time was discussing particularly the differences between
they have the Dash 22 amendments are in their packet.
Okay. Do we have that sheet?
No.
Sure would be nice.
Well, we'll get you a sheet that has a really nice matrix that LRO has put together all the way through the Dash 22s, explaining each of the amendments. We discussed specifically the Dash 22s, which are... If you start in the chain, there's the Dash 9s, which become the Dash 19s with the may consider language and the may decline language, which become the Dash 21s with some language referring to multiple projects on the same site, which become Dash 22, which adds the language that this is a 3/5 vote. So we looked through that and came up with a discussion that we need to have some better clarification of what same site means. I believe, is that right, Mr. Chair?
Yes, that's my recollection too, is that we wanted better language on what one application for the same site or by the same applicant means. And I think what we discussed was the idea of adding language that having to do with closely related applicants. Because it was our understanding that some applicants may disguise their ownership by actually having different companies make applications on what is essentially the same site. One of our problems, of course, is how do you deal with what amounts to a fraudulent attempt to bypass the limitations in the law when you don't have an adequate definition of site or applicant or related company. I think that hits it, doesn't it, Representative Bailey?
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair. And as to the other changes that are embedded within those amendments, we also discussed the trade-offs between those and those in the Dash 20s, as well as the Dash 10 and the Dash 11. And I think on the Dash 10
Representative Benz can correct me if I'm wrong, we're looking at the Dash 10 with a 20-megawatt cap instead of a 25-megawatt cap. Is that correct? Okay. So that there may be a way to combine some of these amendments such that we get some of the same site language that we have the 3/5 vote from the 21s to 22s, as well as some of the things more related to the Dash 10s, Dash 11s, and perhaps Dash 20s. Did I summarize that accurately?
I think so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add, I think Representative Bailey has summarized correctly. The primary focus, of course, of the discussion was on how to merge these changes with the ongoing program, so that will require further discussion about exactly when this program takes effect, if these restrictions are adopted. And we spent a considerable amount of time talking about exactly how much of an revenue impact the change from a $20 million cap to a $15 million cap would have instead of to a $10 million cap. Right. I don't know if we want to ask the director to speak to that or not. But I think that summarizes pretty much what we discussed.
Right. And I think part of our reason for our conversation today is to figure out where the committee is in response to those ideas. After all, our object is to refine this bill. It's not the object is we're not trying to make money or reduce the expenditures of tax credits, except to the extent that we're spending tax credits that perhaps should not be spent because they don't further our long-term or short-term goals. And I think that's where we get into this conversation about what those limits ought to be and who they ought to apply to. And I think, if I can say this, Representative Benz, that part of the issue on the idea of a $15 million cap and the idea of a project smaller than 20 megawatts would qualify for the current $20 million cap was to make certain that we were not going to negatively impact the community projects, including water power and and wind power, and perhaps I think the geothermal projects are quite a bit larger, but maybe not. Representative Benz?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Indeed, we want to make sure that as we're refining some of the opportunity for the department to review these projects, that we don't negatively impact some of the biomass opportunities, which we've heard about, the geothermal opportunities, the hydro opportunities, the new hydro opportunities, and of course small wind. So that is why very supportive of the Dash 10 amendments. If we do have to move them from 25 down to 20, that I have not heard of any between that number. I guess we'd have to ask the director if there are any. But if that's acceptable, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to hear from him.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Graney from Department of Energy. Representative Benz, your question again.
My question, the current Dash 10 amendment maintains the $20 million cap for projects with a capacity up to 25 megawatts. There's been a suggestion that we reduce that from 25 to 20. And my question is, are there small projects that are going to be caught between those two numbers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benz, at that point, the eligible cost will be over $20 million. Either way, if you get up to $20 million when you get up to about 10 megawatts in size for most energy projects these days.
That answers it.
Yeah, I think it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
One other point. We did spend a good deal of time talking about this idea that Representative Berger raised and that Representative Call responded to, of what do you do with people who reasonably relied upon an application to make additional expenditures and put themselves in acting in reliance on the current law. And I think what we concluded was that we could write a very tight piece that basically, amendment, which basically says that if the a company has rights by purpose of an application under the existing statutes and regulations, then the agency will have to honor that as a kind of a vesting rule. Now, what we heard this morning makes me wonder if that's true, because the fact is that what we thought we were dealing with last night was a situation in which an application was deemed to be accepted if it wasn't rejected. And I think what we heard this morning was exactly the opposite of that, was that an application is deemed to be rejected unless it's accepted. So the amendment that I think we were talking about last night would certainly still be appropriate, but it would probably not benefit anybody, because the current rule doesn't give them rights that are based simply on the application, as I understand Mr. Graney. Now, that is an issue we have to resolve if we write the correct grandfather clause. We don't have to resolve that. That would be somebody else's problem to figure out whether in fact they did have some vested rights based on an application alone.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger and then Representative Call.
Perhaps Mr. Graney could give us a glimpse of how many we're talking about and where they are in the process.
If he knows, that'd be great. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that I would have to get back to you on in terms of we do have hundreds of projects on file at any one time. Now, most of them won't be affected by this legislation in terms of the cap size. I can get back to you on the number of projects that are over $5 million.
That would be helpful.
We can do that
handful,
probably today.
Aren't they?
Yeah. So that I can get back to you pretty quick. I guess the other suggestion, the way you could look at this too, if you wanted to do something different from what you have in terms of the effective date of your legislation, which now is based on preliminary certifications, is you could pick a date sometime in the past prior to which applications were on file that are not covered by the new law. That does affect, of course, the revenue reduction impact of the bill, but you could do that too.
And I think it would be helpful if, in the process of answering Representative Berger's question, you weighed in on that question
okay.
as well. That would be helpful. Representative Call.
Yeah, just Mr. Graney, can you tell me what's the average amount of time, what's the longest amount of time a person waits between turning in their application and getting a preliminary certification?
Or being rejected.
Or being rejected.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Call, I guess before the onrush of projects we had last year, our turnaround time for most energy efficiency projects was about 2 weeks. And that's changed. It's probably a month now. For the larger projects that are, you know, the large wind farms and some of the large cogeneration, those do take longer, probably closer to 2 months normally. But we did, again, we've had a significant backlog, and we do have some projects on file that applications have been pending longer, including some where we were having problems simply defining the number of projects and tax credits the applications should qualify for.
And can I?
Yeah, please follow up.
This is actually
a
question for Chris. Chris, is it when does this bill, if we were to adopt this bill, I know the different amendments, but if we when would the changes we make take effect?
Representative McCall, for the dash 22 applies to pre-certifications issued on or after the effective date of the act.
And that's
30 days.
A ways from now.
90 days after the 91st day after sine die. So whenever sine die is, you count 91 days, and any pre-certs issued on or after that date.
So given that we have, on average, it takes 2 months, and we have a bill that takes effect 3 months after sine die, and honestly, if we're talking reasonable reliance on a right that isn't even defined in law, I think to act right now would be maybe not the most reasonable thing to do, to invest a lot of money given the discussions that we're having here. We've got 5 months from this date for a person to get their application and have it pre-certified or denied. It seems to me that that's adequate time with the current grandfather clause. I don't know what the concern is.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Call, maybe as part of getting the information on the number of projects we have pending that are over 5 megawatts, we could get you a sense of whether, in fact, this 5 months we'd be able to clear the books on all those. We'll try to do that when we respond to you.
Thank you. Representative Riley?
Can you tell me how many applications you've had this month?
Not offhand, but we've been averaging about a little less than last year, but it's close to 3,000 would be for the year, so divided by 12, so close to 300 a month.
Follow-up?
Please.
So these are people who actually made application after we started debating this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, that's correct. And when I use the term 300 and 3,000, that's all the applications. That's large and small, most of which are small.
And the vast majority are tiny by comparison to the numbers we're talking about.
Yes, they're in the, Mr. Chairman, 5 and 6 figure range.
Right. Representative Berger?
No, I think we're going to get the information we need from Mr. Graney.
I think so, too.
That's what we... because significant money gets put at risk in these kind of big projects.
Mm-hmm.
And when you then change the playing field after people have made huge investments, that's just not good government. And that is my concern. It's hard to get credit. It's hard to build things in today's economy. And then to have government come along and say, oh, we've delayed, and now we're changing the ground rules is just totally inappropriate. And that's what I'm speaking to. And I think Representative Call would agree with me on that.
I don't disagree. My concern is that when we go to define what reasonable reliance is, we don't have folks 5 months from now turning in an application and then arguing that they have a vested right, you know, on the 90th day after signee die to an application that has no money behind it at all to try to gain access to a credit that we have seen fit to change, and which they should know fully, be fully aware we have changed. And so... to me, given that it takes 2 months on average to get these things done, I don't see that there is, if that's true and the numbers you bring back to us hold solid, it seems to me that giving people 3 months, that these take effect 3 months after signee die is enough information that a person couldn't reasonably have said to rely to having applied after signee die. So that's my thinking.
All right. Thank you. Now, on the other parts of this, let me ask Representative Berger, does that deal with the issue you're raising or not?
It hopefully will provide information on the issue that I'm raising.
Right.
But I, yes.
And I think, Mr. Graney, we should ask you to bring back, too, what you can tell us about the shift that we're considering. Your proposal was to reduce the limit for the kinds of projects we've been discussing to $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal we're discussing now would leave it at $20 million for projects smaller than 20 megawatts, and would leave it at $15 million for other facilities using or producing renewable energy resources or a high-efficiency combined heat and power facility. And currently that, of course, is $20 million.
Right, Mr. Chairman.
And then the other limits would remain the same. If you have some sense as to where that goes, now I recognize that we're cutting in a different place that probably qualifies more projects.
Mr. Chairman, we did a rough look at that last week.
Okay.
And both the 20 to 15 million reduced the revenue reduction by about half of the 20 to 10 million. The 20 megawatt or 25 megawatt threshold was pretty close in terms of reductions to the 15 million. So it was, again, close to about half of what going from 20 to 10 would have been. So you get about the same energy savings, or dollar savings rather, going to 15 million or keeping it at 20 for projects under 20 megawatts in size. So I think you have a policy choice there that you could make, again, based on your revenue needs.
And also on the needs to make sure we get our community projects
right,
built.
Right.
Representative Call.
Just so I really understand what's being said here. So if we reduce the cap from 20 to 15, or we do what Representative Bence is mm-hmm. suggesting, we're reducing our potential revenue to the state from $16.8 million to $8.4 million, approximately?
About that, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Call, roughly.
Yeah, remember, these are all estimates.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We'll rely on the estimates made by the Legislative Revenue Office when they get to it. Yes, Representative Berger.
There's something wrong with the logic here. If the purpose of the Betsy is to get more renewable energy by limiting the amount of energy instead of the amount of money, what are we getting? I'm a little discomforted by this going from 25 to 20. Because the whole purpose is to get the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one that's bothered by this? That the cap on going from 25... I mean, I know we're trying to protect small projects, but if a small project produced a lot of energy, we'd be basically capping it.
I think that that Mr. Graney has basically told us that we hit these limits at 10 megawatts rather than at 20, so we're way over the ceiling.
Well,
anyway,
it is to be hoped that out there is the holy grail of projects that doesn't cost anything and gets huge amounts of power, and I would hate to be part of the vote that cut that off, Mr. Chair, because
yes.
The holy grail that we're searching for might well be out there. Who knows? And it's maybe in one of these small projects.
Well, we have Oregon State University working very hard.
And we're all wearing orange and black in their honor.
to develop that holy grail, Representative Berger. We're looking forward to it. I think the three of us would like the committee's guidance about whether we're heading in the right direction or not on these issues. And I think we've had
clear as much.
Plenty of conversation on the grandfathering issue. But I'm not sure we have on the others. Representative Paul?
Yeah, my discomfort comes from reducing $16.8 million to anything significantly lower than that. I know that, Mr. Chair, you and I apparently have a disagreement about what this exercise is attempting to accomplish. For me, it's to me this exercise means we're going to be seeing more money in the general fund that can go to provide necessary services and forestall some of the cuts that are inevitably going to come anyway. And you know, when we have the multiplier effect and we have $3 in federal match for every dollar that we save here, $16.8 million is $50 million. $50 million in social services. And to cut that number in half for reasons I don't quite understand right now, I think is something is a point past which I would rather not travel.
Okay, thank you. You favor the $10 million original the original language as found in the dash 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maybe each of us see this bill in a different light, of course.
That's part of the reason why we're having all this conversation.
The beauty of this committee. And I've wrestled with this bill like everybody on the committee for a long time now, and it's finally come to me in the last week while I'm wrestling with this, and I see this as a jobs bill, and I know many of us do. Mm-hmm. And there was a figure thrown out probably about a month ago, and I don't remember exactly what it was, and I questioned it at the time, and I don't remember where it came from. The value of a job. These tax credits equal X amount of dollars for each job. And so I stewed on that for a little bit. And granted, this bill addresses many different kinds of projects all over this state. But quite frankly, the jobs in some of our eastern Oregon counties are different than our jobs on this side of the state. And I think that it behooves us to not put the same value on the impact of that job in Sherman County as we do in even my county, Linn County, certainly Multnomah County or Clackamas County and some of those other counties. So I think that we need to be careful when we're just talking about maybe this bill is generating revenue or maintaining revenue. I think that it's wise for us to see this as a jobs bill and an opportunity to put people to work. And those jobs in some of those eastern Oregon counties have incredible value and long-lasting effects over there.
Thank you. So that's the response, Representative Call. I think it would be helpful in dealing with that issue if we went back and looked again at the cost per job. I mean, I believe that the testimony we've had on this bill indicates that the jobs cost in terms of our tax subsidy is lowest on for the manufacturing plants, like the photovoltaic manufacturing or the other manufacturing plants that manufacture these devices, and highest for things where the machine is manufactured somewhere else and simply installed in Oregon, and then having very, very few jobs associated with maintenance. And my recollection is that each one of those jobs in connection with wind power, once you finish the initial construction, costs in the neighborhood of $3 million of our tax subsidy. Whereas in the manufacturing area, it is a tiny fraction of that much. So it's very, very different. If we made a jobs analysis for for renewable energy devices, we wouldn't install any because most of them don't have any jobs connected with them. When a business installs solar panels on their warehouse roof, one presumes that occasionally the warehouseman needs to go up there with a hose and hose them off, and that's about it for jobs, a few hours a month. But we don't subsidize the installation of photovoltaics on the warehouse roof because of the jobs. We do it because we want the distributed and renewable energy that produces. So I think we make different analyses depending upon which thing we're doing. And that's the reason why we put in the law in 2008, the piece having to do with jobs for the manufacturing companies, so that Mr. Graney's agency would consider the value of those jobs in the manufacturing area in the granting of these applications. But we did not put that in the same way, at least, for renewable energy devices, precisely because once the installation is done, there are few and sometimes no jobs connected with their actual operation. Have I got that more or less right, Mr. Graney?
Mr. Chairman, other than the installation, generally that's correct, and that's largely correct for energy efficiency measures, too. But they do help the business operate more effectively and efficiently and maintains jobs. We don't really keep track of those other than through the study we have done every couple of years that we provided to the committee earlier this year.
Right. I wish it were much simpler, but it isn't. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other principle that I would add to this discussion is one that we discussed a little bit last night. I think it's clear from the discussion that there are different ideas about the intent in the modification, that there are questions that remain about the effect of various changes. The analogy I used, and I'll use it again, is that I feel like we are, in some sense, moving furniture in a dark room, and we're hoping to flick on the lights and see that it's been nicely arranged. And whether that's to fix a program that there's a perception that may have gotten away from us, or whether it's to increase the overall economic effect in this state and thereby increase revenue, I would just urge caution and that we make sure that whatever changes that we do don't also get away from us.
I think that horse has been out of the barn for some time now. I think we did that in 2007. Representative Bailey. I'm sorry, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm thinking about other things.
Yes.
Than who you are. Sorry.
Like everyone else on this panel, I've been thinking about this as well and thinking what the purpose is and so on. It does have many purposes. And I think we have to, in my mind, what we need to do is, first of all, decide which purpose takes precedent, because there are so many of them. In my mind, it is jobs. And that may not have been the original purpose, but I think that, for one thing, part of this energy businesses, enterprises, have matured and don't need as much help as they used to. And I think that's a part of my thinking. Some of them are still in the maturing process and do need more help. And where I'm come down is, at this point, we need to keep fostering those businesses, those energy-producing businesses, which need the help, which aren't mature yet, and those which produce good-paying jobs. So my take on all of this is, we need to back away from mature industries and continue to foster non-mature industries that have good promise.
And there's nothing in this bill that addresses that issue
at all.
That's
correct.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I hesitate to ask the next question, so I won't.
Okay.
Other discussion now. Representative Call.
Yeah, if I might just beat this horse to death
Please.
A little bit here. Or beyond death. We'd
like to do that.
I just trying to put some of my thoughts in a little broader context, given that we passed a piece of legislation out of this chamber yesterday to put periodic sunsets in and revisit expenditures, try to revisit expenditures in a way that something akin to the way the Ways and Means process worked, at least from my perspective, that's what I hope that bill would achieve. I think it's important to just drill down on exactly what benefits are out there with regards to how big how much of a reduction we make. In the Ways and Means process, it's a zero-sum exercise this session. If we give money to one program, we're taking it from another. And I think that zero-sum exercise should migrate down the hallway to this committee, and we should be thinking about what we really need to be paying for as a state, what our tax dollars should be funding. And at bottom, for me, this question is very easily answered. To the extent that we can cap some of the elements of the Betsy to fund necessary services, without doing significant harm to the Betsy program, we should. And I think that we have not heard any testimony that would show that reducing the cap from $20 to $10 million would simply destroy this program. In fact, I think that there is enough thinking on this subject to the contrary, that we could make that reduction without serious detriment to the Betsy program. But I think we should move forward with something akin to the dash sevens or dash fours, then dash nines, now dash 19s and burgers, and now the dash 22s. Right, whatever that is, however we get to there, I feel like the kernel of the idea that was there from the very beginning is still the best idea, and it still generates the absolute most revenue from our committee to give over to the Ways and Means process. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're correct. The dash 22 would accomplish it, what you're proposed. Are there further comments now? I'll let you know that I'm going to try to poll a committee and figure out what we can pass. I don't want to do it right this minute. I'll talk to you individually and try to get some sense of what people's druthers are. Recognize, of course, that the bill, whatever we pass, still has to get past the floor, and it still has to get past the Senate. Representative Berger.
I was going to give it a pass, Mr. Chair, but I have to repeat my remarks, which is we have the renewable portfolio standards that are coming our way,
yep,
that we passed, and that demands that we have renewable energy projects, and the big ones are wind. Right now, those are the big coming ones. There are others in the pipeline that we're trying to encourage. But we passed that bill. We have standards that we said we were going to try and meet. So we can rail all we want against wind projects, but if that is our goal, we better go with what works. And at this point, wind is the big enchilada. So I'm just repeating it again that there is a cost to moving to renewable energy, and we better be prepared to face it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that that comment as well. Anything else this morning? I'm trying to think about when we reopen on this bill. I don't think we're going to be ready tomorrow. In fact, we have amendments still coming, I think, that we talked about last
you
night.
You win.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gelsick.
I support the Dash 42 amendment.
I hope we don't get that far.
Miller. Supports Rep. Bailey's amendments, as I think.
Thank
so
you. Well, we'll have to repost. Yeah, we will repost. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2472. Thank you.
Thank you, Thank you.
And
okay.
Just
on to the next.
Me that it ain't broke. It's hard to fix.
It should be ready.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
No.
Okay. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2646.
Yes, I will. Yeah, I'll get you.
I'll wait your turn for it.
Well, I don't want you to hear all the stuff. They said they want us to go to the top.
It's just a work session.
Oh, the mature industries, right? Thank you.
Did I open on 2646?
I did.
Okay. So, right. Dave, go ahead and, okay, and describe this bill for us. And,
okay. Chair Bernhardt, members of the committee, House Bill 2646 is so-called hybrid popular bill. It extends the farm use special assessment to land used to grow intensively managed hardwood timber, including hybrid poplar, from 12 years to 20 years. It expands eligibility for forest land special assessment to include certain lands for intensively managed hardwood timber production. And the bill applies to property tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2007. And in prior hearing, we discussed, you heard the cycle of hybrid poplar and related issues, and you heard a testimony from Morrow County about administrative cost of assessment and taxation. And in front of you, you have dash one amendment. Yeah. Trying to find consistent language and gutting much of the original bill. Among other things, it accomplishes the application of property tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2007, considering some of the hybrid populars are already after 12 years of growth cycle. The revenue impact, of course, assumes that affected parties will opt for best possible solution if they're disqualified from farm use assessment. Even without extension, hybrid poplar growers can apply and qualify for other forms of special assessment. So revenue impact is still minimal.
Would you hit that amendment yet again so we all understand it?
Okay.
I think it went by pretty fast. What does that actually do?
Okay. If you read the if you look at the amendment line 4 on page 2 line 6 there after trees the to make sure internal consistency and there are places where this expression had to be inserted,
mm-hmm.
was neglected in the original bill, so was inserted after trees. So the language or the expression intensively managed hardwood timber was inserted. And then the same is true for line 7 through 10, and then on page 4, lots of lines are deleted, 7 through 45, and then page 5 and 6 are deleted. And then on page 7, also, lots of lines are deleted. The back of the amendment, there's section 15 that says the current act, this bill will apply to property tax years beginning on
mm-hmm.
or after July 1, 2007. The original bill said 2010.
I see. It goes backwards.
It goes backwards, all right. Yes.
All right. Colleagues, this bill appears to have a constitutional problem, and I'm going to close the work session. Let's go ahead then with none of these other bills are ready to work. Is there any value in having a conversation about them today? Okay. 2005, 2105. All right, so shall I carry it over? You can post, can't you? We'll repost. Colleagues, will repost on these other two bills? We had an extra hour to meet today until 11 o'clock, so you get almost 2 hours to go do other things and work on other bills. Isn't that wonderful? And with that, we've completed what we can complete today. The committee is adjourned.
2 extra hours is like heaven in this.
No. Oh, no. So,